Accession number 10420, rule 19.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 19. What happened next, Colonel?
Well, the very next day, we left for London for good. And there were two trains organized to take us to Gorok on the Clyde for our departure to the Middle East. The first train went at 12:50 in the morning, and the CO was the OC train, and my company went with it. However, I was to be the OC second train, which left at 7:20 in the evening, and it was taking the four rifle companies, Derek Tomlinson was my adjutant, and the RSM was RSM McMahon.
Can I ask you, just before you go any further, did you have any experiences of men who obviously did not want to go abroad?
Yes. On this particular train, on my particular train, I think it was, there were two deserters, the only two we had, and there was another chap, a private race, who'd shot himself in through the foot in the guardroom. And they were, the two deserters had to carry a race onto the train. And it was a punishment for them in itself, the ridicule that they got from the whole of the, every single other soldier in the battalion as they were carried to that particular train. And the whole battalion laughed at them. They were subsequently court-martialed on the board, and I was the president of the court-martial on board.
What send-off did you get?
Oh, the send-off, so far as the second train was concerned, was absolutely wonderful. I think every person living in Kelumpton came to see us off on the Kelumpton station. They were held back by the local police from coming onto the into the station until we were aboard, and it didn't take us very long to get onto the train. And as soon as we were on, the crowd were let in, and it was a wonderful send off. And the local Methodist Padre, that afternoon, I'm talking about my train at 7:20, the local Padre that afternoon had held a voluntary service in his chapel, which was absolutely crammed by soldiers and the inhabitants of Kelumpton, and he too came to see us off. On the platform being loaded into the train were a whole lot of army Dixies, you know, stew pans, cans. And there was a quack, quack, quack noise coming from one. And Brigadier Redman was there, I think, and wondering what it was. And I told him the story. It was the duck some 10 months before had been given to the cookhouse at B Company for a meal, but the British soldier couldn't possibly wring the duck's neck, and it was the pet. It had had a very unpleasant experience in Kelumpton, because in the street, in Main Street of Kelumpton, there's a little runner goes down the street, a sort of almost drain, but it is in fact running the whole time. This unfortunate duck had got washed away down the runner and into a cundit, and the cooks had had a great deal of difficulty in getting the duck out. but they were determined to do so. They got it out, and here it was in a Dixie going out to the Middle East. And of course, the brigadier was intrigued this duck should be going out with the B Company on the long journey to Egypt. Anyhow, so far as meals were concerned on this occasion, because it was going to be a very long journey, they'd had their last supper meal. Then they were going to have breakfast. Now, the breakfast was not issued out as a sort of haversack ration. It was all in one for the whole four rifle companies. And then they had a haversack ration after that to help them on beyond the breakfast time. We set off, and I settled down for a long journey and slept very well. We got to Carlisle, I think, between 6 and 7 in the morning, and the whole train was emptied. Everybody got out onto the platform, and there they were given tea and breakfast. The breakfast was issued by the quartermaster staff, and they ate the breakfast on the platform at Carlisle. And they were given exactly 20 minutes to eat their breakfast, but it meant the carriages got a little fresh air in, and then we started the journey on to Gourock, where we got to arrived about 11:45. Now, we anticipated that as soon as we got out of the train, we could walk straight onto the ship, which was lying alongside. But that wasn't so. We were all put on a lighter, and we had to do a quarter of an hour's trip by sea to the transporter, the Duchess of Richmond, lying out in the Clyde. It rained the whole time, and as soon as we got on board, the officers and sergeants were shown their bunks, and I shared a bunk with Sammy cabin with Sammy Battiscombe, and the officers and sergeants were shown their cabins, and I shared one with Sammy Battiscombe. The men were extremely crowded. It was, as I say, the CPR Duchess of Richmond, which incidentally was never meant for travel in the Middle East. It was North Atlantic travel journeys, and therefore it was totally unsuitable for going into hot climates. It was 23,000 tons. There were on board the 6th and the 8th DLI, 151 Brigade Headquarters, some Corps signals, a signals group, and some Royal Army Air Force, and there were 3,000 in all on board. For the first day, for the first half day, we merely gazed out, looking out over the Clyde, and we had one more day to do that before we set off. And I remember one of the sights I saw was a lighter come alongside with nothing on board other than crates and crates of gin, and that was all loaded aboard. And it was rather interesting to look at the shipping in the Clyde. There were two battleships there. I think the Rodney and the Nelson were there, and there were at least three cruisers, and there was the Argus, and about 11 destroyers, and submarines, and two submarines, I think there were, and E-boats, and there were Dutch and French ships, and even the River Danube tanker, and there was a sunken French cruiser. And they were in such a hurry to get us away that we were 300 tons short of fresh water, and we set off with 300 guns, short fresh water, which I think we picked up when we eventually got to Freetown.
Well, were the men sleeping on hammocks?
Yes, I should mention that there were two decks. There was the mess deck and the troop deck. And happily, the chaps slept in the troop deck and therefore didn't have to sleep in the mess deck. And they all slept in hammocks, strung up, just like they did of old.
And extremely crowded.
Extremely crowded. Well, there were 3,000 on board.
How many would you say that the ship would normally hold in its normal
I wouldn't know what a 23,000-ton passenger ship would hold. I think what one's got to remember, and it's interesting, is the fact that this would have never been done today. It would all be done by air. And that this long journey of 8 weeks, 2 months, in these appalling conditions, nobody would think of doing it today. I don't say they were absolutely appalling, but discomfort.
It didn't put too much pressure on latrines and toilets.
I suppose it did. Yes, and of course, they couldn't all sit down together and have a meal together. That's what upset the training programs, of course, what training we could do on board, because you'd suddenly find half the chaps would be away having a meal when the other half had finished. I think they had three sittings, I think they had.
Was there great emphasis then on hygiene and cleanliness?
Oh, yes. Every day the OC troops, who I'm going to come and mention, and the captain would walk around the whole ship while the chaps were at boat stations.
So there were inspections every day?
Every day. And you never went anywhere without your life jacket. Of course, there weren't sufficient boats to take 3,000. So you just prayed that a torpedo wouldn't find its way amidships.
So what was life like? What was the journey like?
I'd better go on in rather more detail, because it changed. We left in cold, rainy, stormy weather. We lost our escort, because of the Bismarck, bar one, the old Exeter of River Plate fame. And then when you got to the Azores, you changed into hot weather uniform. And then when you went round the Cape, it was winter again, and you changed back into battle dress. And you slept below decks, whereas in the hot weather you could sleep on the deck. And then when you came round the Cape, you did it again. You changed back into the hot weather again. You landed up eventually in Egypt in intensive of midsummer. We spent the first day just looking at all this shipping in the Clyde. And then the very next day, we left. It would be the 22nd of May, and the convoy set sail. And the boom, you know what I mean by the boom across the harbour, when submarines coming in, was lifted. And incidentally, the Duchess of Bedford, which was part of our convoy, got stuck on a sandbank. Eventually got off, but we set sail. The captain of the loudspeaker, Loudhailer, wished us all luck, and we wished him luck. And the crew of the boom, the ship that lifted the boom, they cheered us as we went through, and we cheered them. And the OC troops. Now, the OC troops was appointed to the ship. He was, in fact, in East Yorks, but he wasn't drawn out of the troops going aboard. He was completely separate. He had his own adjutant, which he did take from the Chapel Rice from the 6th Battalion. But he was an old East Yorks. He was called Tatton, and we called him Tatters. Throughout the whole journey, he and the Brigadier Redman were always at loggerheads. Redman was so nice to him, though, and would always let him have his way if he wanted this old fossil of the OC troops, the old Tatters. And well, the very first day, he gave us a lecture to the effect that we always had to salute the captain, the ship's captain, and that he gave us some advice on tipping. I can't remember that, what it was. And he also advised us on the scarcity of water, because this was going to be very difficult. But as I say, I think we made it up at Freetown in Africa. Well, now, it's worth recalling from my notes, we're at sea now, the armaments on that ship, on the Duchess of Richmond. There were seven Brens, I think they were Brens, or Lewis guns, perhaps they were, seven Brens down on the port side, and four Lewis guns, certainly old Lewis guns, on the bridge, and seven guns down the starboard side. And there were two Beaufort guns, and one 6-inch gun in the stern, and one 3-inch gun, and the gun in the stern was manned by the RAOC. And the others were manned by us. And we had four depth charges and smoke canisters. Within the first 24 hours of set sailing, Tatters and the Brigadier were at loggerheads over one thing or another, I can't remember now. But we used to try out our guns, and certainly to start with, there was a muddle over the feeding arrangements, and we found the Royal Air Force very difficult to get on with. They seemed to have nobody in command. They rather had the chip on their shoulders. I know I began to feel seasick as soon as we set sail around the north coast of Ireland. The convoy consisted of the Georgic, the Montano, the Orduna, and Almondera, and the Christian Meyer, which was a Dutchman. And there was another one of the Elder Dempster line. And the commander was the Royal Naval Reserve captain of the Georgic. However, he very soon had a thrombosis, and I think our chap took over. And we had the escort to start with of the Argus, which I think was an aircraft carrier, and the HMS Exeter of the famous River Plate, and HMS Cardiff, and an anti-aircraft cruiser, and nine destroyers. Very soon, almost the very first day, I think an aeroplane came over, and it was shot down. The sinking of the Hood took place, and the whole escort left us, and all we had was Exeter and the good HMS Exeter took us, escorted us the whole way round.
At what point of your journey did you lose your escort?
Just about 3 or 4 days later. The original intention, I believe, was for the whole the whole convoy to go up to Iceland and then turn right south, right out in mid-Atlantic, not hug the coast, in what we did do, because it was too dangerous then for, supposedly, for on account of German submarines, whereas we were to have gone, but we didn't. Perhaps it was because we lost our escort, I don't know. Anyhow, we went down the Irish coast, straight down to the Azores. We all felt a bit seasick, at least certainly I did. And I think we changed course round about the second day out or the third day out. About the 25th we changed the course and came down the west coast of Ireland. It was very rough going to start with, and I felt very seasick, as a good many others did, and including our old duck. Our old duck felt seasick too, because Corporal Borrowdale, or Private Borrowdale, who still lives here in the town here in Barnacastle, said, told me one day that the duck was somewhat seasick. Although we were working south, we were always changing course, zigzagging the whole time. And the Exeter would be always in front with its seaplane flying ahead, looking to see if it could see any submarines. And he did that the whole time until the unfortunate accident, which I can mention later, which took place on my birthday, on the 27th of June. It took a bit of time to settle in. I went onto the bridge one day and asked the captain if I could look at the four Lewis guns. I'm sure they were Lewis guns up, old Lewis guns up there. And he said, yes, but tell your sergeant majors or whatever you call them, they're not allowed to come up here and sun themselves. He was a very, rather a martinet, as the captain of the ship. We then eventually passed through the Azores, it was just like ants, you know, everybody running about all over the place. The captain, as I think I've mentioned, used to hold his inspection. One day he met the duck coming right away down one of the passages on board, and so did this old Tatters, and they wanted to know what this pet was doing on board, what this bird was doing on board, and they issued an edict that it had to be put finished off and dealt with its neck wrung. But the good Colonel Yates, he pleaded for the duck, and it was saved. However, it eventually found the heat of the equator too much for it. It lost its oil out of its feathers, I remember, and it was finally died and was buried at sea. After being about a year with the Cooks of B Company. That was the demise of the duck. Well, we got to the Azores, and there we did have an alarm. There was most fearful zigzagging, And the walrus on the Exeter did, I think, spot a submarine. However, it was all it passed over. Everyone had to lie on the deck. Wherever they were, they had to lie down. And you can imagine the whole 3,000 of us all lying down. And there was a chap called Captain Tom Black, who was an officer, who was enormously fat. And he just, poor chap, he's dead now, he just rolled about the deck. He was so fat. But that was the alarm. And nothing came of it in the end. Things were very difficult to start with. As I said, the Royal Air Force seemed to have a chip on the shoulder, and the brigade major couldn't hit it off with them at all. You know, however, we all sorted, everything got sorted out really in the end. All we could do was really do PT, have discussions, but it all had to be done on the deck, on the outside. It was far too hot to do any form of training, PT or anything like that. You couldn't do that in the troop decks down below. So everything was done above, on the deck above.
Was that the only form of training that you were able to do? PT and basically lectures and talks.
That's about all you could do. That's about all.
Were the lectures and talks given to you by outsiders who were?
Yes, some of them were, and then not necessarily all matters military. You could get a lecture. I come to it somewhere later on the journey. Mountain warfare, a lecture on mountain warfare, which is was a very good one by Sammy Bethlehem, who'd experienced it.
What about food?
The food was very good. It was extraordinarily good, including the strawberry ices. And there was a free issue when you got to the doors of lime juice to prevent scurvy. The chaps had lime juice, I think it was, at their meals, or soda water or something like that.
Was discipline good?
The discipline was very good, yeah. Very good indeed. There was never any trouble. I know Ian English of the 8th Battalion had a very good book on birds of the sea, and we used to study the birds following the boat, the albatrosses and the skuas and the shearwaters. We used to identify all those.
Was leisure a problem at all for yourselves and the men?
Was what?
Leisure, was it a problem on...